From coast to coast and around the world, you are now walking with spirit. Hello, everybody. I'm Monique Chapman, your host, and thank you for joining us for an hour of personal and metaphysical growth. Each week, Walking with Spirit explores different topics from the mundane to the mystical with stimulating guests from all over the world who share their knowledge to uplift consciousness. Tonight, we have my good friend Marshall Masters with us, and he's the author of The Godchild Covenant, Indigo ET, and he's a contributor of the latest release of the Colburn Bible, and we're going to have a lot of fun tonight talking about that. If you'd like to speak with us and ask a question about what could possibly happen to us in the times that are coming up in the very near future, the phone lines are open. You can give us a call at 1-888-268-4313 or 530-876-3222. Again, the numbers are toll-free, 888-268-4313 or 530-876-3222. We also encourage you to email your questions to spiritanswers@walkingwithspirit.net, and your questions will be answered in real time on the air. Now, a bit about me for our new listeners. I'm an intuitive energy therapist with 25 years' experience. I've helped thousands of people from stay-at-home parents to corporate executives make their invisible dreams visible. Utilizing my gifts, I am in touch with the past, present, and the future. I help eliminate the fog, paving the way for your clarity. I work with Eastern, Western, African, and Caribbean methodologies, in addition to being a board-certified hypnotherapist, Reiki master teacher, and ordained minister. Now, we have Marshall with us tonight, Marshall Masters, and he's a former CNN Science Features news producer. He's a freelance writer, TV analyst, and publisher of Yowza.com, and that's YOWUSA.com, which is also his website. And he has a radio show, too. It's called Cut to the Chase with Marshall Masters, and when he's on in a moment, he can talk a little bit more about that. He spent 3 years researching the Nerubu flyby and related topics, and we're going to talk to him tonight, if I can get it out, about what's going on in our Earth. Marshall, save me. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's good to be on with you, Monique. I always love talking to you. I always get this. You know, I got to be honest. Every time we talk on the phone, whether we're on the radio or just chit-chatting about things otherwise, I always get this nice glowing energy feel.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you.
I like sending out glow.
Well, I love getting it.
Okay, well, for those who missed your last interview on the show, why don't you give a little background about you so that people are, you know, familiar with you?
Mm-hmm. We publish a site called Your Own World USA. It's YOWUSA.com. And our site is an education site. We're researchers in a secular vein, and we are researching currently what we consider to be a very severe threat to the planet, and that's an incoming planet, which is dubbed Planet X or Nibiru. Mm-hmm. It's also called, the Mayans called it the Red Comet. The ancient Egyptians called it the Destroyer. The Druids called it the Frightener. We are finding vast amounts of information in ancient works and that describe this event. And the last two times this object came through our system in its 3,600-year orbit was for Noah's Flood, the Deluge,
mm-hmm.
and Exodus. Mm-hmm. And Exodus was the best-case scenario, and Noah's Flood was the worst-case scenario.
And what do you think our scenario is going to be?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, and that's we're about ready to put a very substantial article up on Yowza.com. It'll be up tomorrow
mm-hmm.
on the South Pole Telescope. And
well, why don't you tell us about the South Pole Telescope? I know that there is a few universities working together to, I guess, gather some information about, I don't know, the dark forces?
Well, in a few years ago, the University of Chicago was commissioned by the U.S. government to build a large adaptive telescope A Dutch firm has built a large infrared radio telescope assembly. All of this is being assembled now in Texas. That's where they're doing the final grinding on the lens.
Mm-hmm.
All that has been done, getting it all in containers, because they have to take it by ship down to Antarctica or bases nearby. And then from there, they're literally going to be running a Berlin airlift of C-130 Hercules aircraft, cargo aircraft, specially adapted to that environment, because they're taking it within a few very short distance of the South Pole.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why they're doing that is it's the best viewing sky imaginable, and this object is coming from the south. So they're going to have an observatory that is going to be actually more powerful, more capable than the Hubble telescope.
Mm.
And the reason why they're doing the huge infrared was that this object is going to be very difficult to see visually. You know, it'll be a long time before we could stand out on the porch and go, yep, there it is, right there. The reason why is it is occluded by a dust field. And what makes things visible is their ability to either create or reflect light.
Uh-huh.
And this object doesn't reflect a lot of light, and very little, but it has a very pronounced infrared signature. In 1983, it was, according to reliable sources that we have, it was detected by the IRAS satellite, and which they said eventually failed because of a mechanical issue. That was a cover story, according to our source. What they did was they found this thing in the southern skies, and after that, they just forgot the rest of the mission and just said, track this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. A lot of people have an idea that if you have a large object, it's like a planet. It's just going to keep orbiting, and you know exactly when things are going to happen. We know when the equinox is going to be in this
mm-hmm.
four seasons, and well, a large object in a 3,600 year orbit like this planet, it's going to have a great deal of variance. And so yesterday's tracking data is yesterday's tracking data. You can just basically use it to wrap fish.
Mm-hmm.
And they need something that's going to monitor it. Now, somebody would say, well, the logical thing is let's put up another satellite. Well, that's not going to happen. And the reason why is we're going into another solar maximum, which is going to be more violent, if you will, than the last. And
okay,
the last
so what's the solar maximum?
The solar maximum, this is the sun cycle.
Okay.
Sunspot cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so as it builds up and you reach your solar max, your peak in the solar maximum cycle, your solar flare activity is going to shut down communication satellites, cause all kinds of problems for us here on Earth. There was one time a coronal mass ejection, a solar flare, hit northern Canada and took thousands, tens of thousands of people off the grid for a few days. So this is the kind of damage these storms can do. And so when they are happening, the people that are running satellites in space will do is they'll actually just shut the birds down,
mm-hmm.
fold up the solar panels, bundle them up tight, and hope they, A, survive the solar winds and the event, and, B, that they can start them again. You know, restarting a satellite,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like being lost in the middle of Wyoming in the dead of winter and you only got one quarter.
Yeah, and no telephone.
Yeah, and a booth. And it's like, oh, don't fail me now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those tough things. So a satellite may not be really survivable, because the last time we were entering this kind of solar activity was about 1958, and we really didn't have a lot in the sky then.
Okay.
Mostly a lot of old V2 rockets,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't stay up there all that long. You know, up and down, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Today, the skies are just littered with spacecraft.
Yeah.
And the solar activity is going to take them down. So they need a permanent base, something that's survivable, something that's highly capable, That's the reason why they're going to the most desolate, remote part of the globe to start doing the tracking on this. Now, that tracking data, as it's coming in, is going to give them the information that they need to say, okay, it's going to either be another exodus or it's going to be another Noah's flood.
And how much notice do you think they would be able to give the rest of the world?
I would say that the best that they can do, you know, they're going to, it's going to be a process of refining it and refining it and refining it. For example, you've seen where they've come out and they say, well, there's a near-Earth object, there's an asteroid out there, and it's got a X percent chance of hitting the Earth. And, of course, the newspapers splash it, and everybody gets paranoid, and they have all the TV shows. And then what happens is as they continue tracking the object,
uh-huh,
and they refine the trajectory, they develop a very detailed ephemeris for it, you know, a table that tells them where to expect this thing at any given time within a year.
Uh-huh.
And that's the process. Well, it's the same process here. What they really have to do is they have to track this object. And they've, you know, and this is a first for us. It's not an object really that we're really familiar with.
Uh-huh.
And it's a long period object, so that makes it really tough because you don't know how it's going to interact with the other major bodies in our system.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, other major bodies is something interesting. If we had the plot where Nerubu is, where would it be on the scale of our planetary system? Is it within our solar system now, or is it outside? Where would it be?
It's to the south and beyond the orbit right now of Pluto, which is the best guess that we could make as researchers.
Uh-huh.
Keep in mind that we know the government knows where it's at. That's the reason why they're building the South Pole Telescope.
Uh-huh.
And we're truly delighted that they're doing it and spending the treasure that it's taking. That's a lot of treasure because this is a large facility. It's going to be like the size of a small mini mall.
Uh-huh.
So it's huge, you know, staffed with a lot of people, a lot of equipment, you know, and about the most desolate area you can go to.
Uh-huh. So why isn't the government telling us more information about it?
Well, if they start telling everybody information about it, they start a panic,
uh-huh,
and there's, you know, they do have some things. The information kind of leaks out a little bit, but if people really get wrapped up in this thing, then they quit going to work, they quit paying taxes, government can't collect taxes. You know, it's a, you know, the whole socioeconomic model starts grinding apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what they really want to do is before they go out and announce anything, because all they could really think about it realistically, if they said we're doing this to go look at it to define the extent of whether or not this is or is not a threat, and if it is a threat, to what extent it is a threat, then all you're going to have is idle speculation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to cause problems. So they're going to go out and nail it. They're going to know exactly what they have to deal with.
And hopefully let the masses know. Now, if it's on the outskirts of Pluto, why would it possibly wipe us out or do something to us? Why wouldn't it get everything in the way between us and Pluto?
Well, it's not coming, it's coming up from the south,
uh-huh,
all right? And this is in a highly inclined or even perpendicular orbit to Earth. What it does is it swings up from below us and passes through. And it, one of the things we have found is that the Mayans and the Egyptians both were monitoring Venus. That was their harbinger planet. As goes Venus, so go we.
Uh-huh.
And this thing comes in from the south, swings around, and then cuts back down. You just imagine a big oval, a stretched out, you know, oval pattern. And so it could come in, probably it's going to come in somewhere between Mars and Jupiter.
Okay.
And where it goes out is anyone's guess. The issue is not where it comes in and goes out. And so there's nothing here that indicates in any of the historical data that it is going to hit us directly.
Okay.
All right. If it did, then, you know, this conversation is pointless because, you know, we would just be another debris field.
Yeah, we're done.
That's it. You know, that's it. Game over. Like, you know, we would just be sitting there like Peggy Lee singing, "Is That All There Is?" And it's not going to be like that. However, we have other concerns with this object coming into the system because of what it brings with it and how it affects other things. And what we're seeing is that the immediate thing that is causing effect is, you know, look at global warming, but look at our solar activity.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we started, when we first started doing the research on this, we really weren't looking for Planet X to begin with. What we were looking for back in 1999 when I started working with my group is that we were trying to understand global warming as a phenomenon.
Uh-huh.
You know, was it right? You know, was it really happening or not? At that time in 1999, it was still a bunch of isolated tree huggers and, you know, the big corporate naysayers had the stage, and everyone's going, you know, stop chaining yourself to old growth trees. And we were looking at it, and what we saw is that the debate was very what we call earth-centric.
Uh-huh.
You know, the problem's here, so therefore the cause is here as well. Earth.
Okay.
Okay. Forget the rest of the solar system. Forget the universe. Forget the cosmos. It's here.
Uh-huh.
It's earth-centric. It's typical human approach to things. All right? It's one step above sacrifice the virgin.
Okay.
And we were looking at all of this, and we saw, you know, that all of the noise in this debate, this earth-centric debate, wasn't driving really to the core of causality. Because you have one good volcanic eruption, it's going to do a lot more to the biosphere than man has done.
Uh-huh.
We become a blip compared to that. And so, yes, we're not saying we're not contributing. We're contributing. We're basically turbocharging the process, if you will.
Okay.
But what the real causality is the sun. And the sun is becoming more and more increasingly active. And according to German scientists who's been studying it, it is that we've been in a solar frenzy since 1940.
Okay. So with all of this activity that's going on, let's back up a minute. We're speaking with Marshall Masters, and we're talking about, right now, Planet X, Nerubu. If you'd like to give us a call and talk to us, the phone lines are open. The number is 888-268-4313. Or 530-876-3222, or email spiritanswers@walkingwithspirit.net. Now, Marshall, with everything that you said is going on, is part of this energy coming into our solar system having an effect on the interesting weather that the world has been having lately?
Yes, that's this is something that we saw happening back in 2000.
Uh-huh.
When we finally said, hey, there's a bigger causality, because we were looking at the other planets. In other words, Mars has global warming, too. All right, and there's all kinds of strange things happening with the other planets that we're observing now.
Uh-huh.
New EM fields, new radio emissions. Things are lighting up. Think of yourself as standing in a theater, okay, and then all of a sudden the lighting technician just throws on every bank of lights.
That would be
and
a bit right.
And that's really kind of happening with our solar system. So we're not unique. All the other major bodies in our system are being perturbed in one way or another. And this is being driven right now by the increase of solar activity. And this solar activity is going to continue increasing. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have the things that we were saying at Yowza back in 2000, 2001 would be happening, and this time are happening. So we're really more focused on what's happening from here through to through the next decade.
Uh-huh.
And so all of the things we're seeing, quakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, this next hurricane season is going to be worse than the last. What could be, you know, that's not good news.
No.
The next solar maximum is going to be worse than the last. The last was the greatest on recorded history.
Uh-huh.
So this pattern is just going to increase as this object is coming into the system. Now, when it's coming in, and the thing is that it's perturbing us. We look at the world is crazy right now.
Uh-huh.
People are... You know, they're acting almost irrationally, and or they are in many cases.
I was just thinking about our government when you said that. It made me chuckle.
Well, there's the numerous examples come to mind, and you know, so that this is all part of something you and I started researching, which
mm-hmm.
we called the Planet X syndrome, and that the human body is, you know, it's like the surface of our planet, and about the same ratio of water.
Yeah.
And so with being that we're beings of water and we're affected by electromagnetic fields, you know, we're getting an itch we can't scratch.
Okay.
And so this is inflaming old hatreds and strange behaviors. And this behaviors are going to continue on. That's going to be a problem. We're going to have more violent weather. We're going to have more. The catastrophes are going to start. They're not going to hit in a biblical sense if people are saying, wow, all of a sudden one day everything goes flunk.
Uh-huh.
And no, it's more like a slow motion train wreck. And that's the way it's going to be. It'll just increase in intensity and then we will get to a peak point, which will be pretty tough, and then after that, things will quiet down, and we rebuild.
Okay. Well, with all of this water activity coming, you know, between the hurricanes that may be worse this year, the season coming up, and what we've experienced so far here in California with the rain and the mudslides, do we need to build another ark?
We have a caller online.
Oh, we do? Okay.
Yes. Do you want me to put him on?
Oh, yes, please.
You got it.
Okay. Hello? Okay. Ouch. Hello?
Monique and Marshall, this is Kathleen. How are you doing?
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Oh, fine. I'm really enjoying your show. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Yes, we can.
Okay, great. You know, one thing I wanted to ask was, you're talking about the effects of the Planet X, and I was wondering about, it looks like it has really strong gravitational force, orbit around our sun, and
just taking that in consideration, and you're talking about the earthquakes and tsunamis, I was wondering, could you expound maybe a little bit more on how you might think it might affect our planet in as far as, you know, natural changes, but also you were talking about the effect on human beings, and I was thinking about the possible say disruption to people's thinking pattern, and you were talking about you know, maybe some increased violence, this sort of thing, or erratic behavior anyway. I was wondering what your comment would be on that.
Okay, that's a two-part question, so let me...
Probably five-part.
Okay. Well, we got some harmony here. The first thing is, as it's coming in, and the way it's going to be affecting us is that primarily solar activity, but also when this object comes through our system, it's not going to come alone. It's going to be attended by a lot of other smaller objects, and it comes through this almost like a big cue ball, and so it's going to smack into asteroids that have been out there and completely harmless.
Sure.
So we're going to have more higher frequencies in impact events, and this is consistent with deep time records that tell us that asteroid impacts do not happen like in this slow Darwinian prodigious cycle that you could, you know, mathematically estimate. That rather what happens is that when we do get impacts, we get them in a real tight peak period of violence, and then we have a long period of quiescence.
Uh-huh.
We're at the end of this period of quiescence, so we will start seeing impact events. I can tell you that we have people reporting to us that in India right now, in rural India, the yogis are getting their people together and telling them there will be impact events, floods, tsunamis, and they're working on helping them prepare with disaster training and setting aside what they feel are the right kind of supplies. And so I find it interesting that, you know, we have rural yogis in India that are, you know, they're ahead of the game,
right,
so to speak. So you're going to have the impact events, but likewise, other things you're going to see is solar activity is going to become much greater. The planet weather patterns are going to be highly erratic. It's going to cause more more severe catastrophic events in terms of quakes, tsunamis, cyclones, hurricanes, this type of thing. We're going to have an increase in that. The other thing we're going to see is it'll really, because it's going to mess with the weather system, we're going to have a lot of problem with feeding ourselves. We're going to have energy wars. We're going to have food wars. We're going to be strapped for resources. Take a look at what Hurricane Katrina did in New Orleans to the oil industry.
Yeah, and that's just minor in comparison with, you know, potential is here.
Right, and so it's, you know, today I went to the pump, it was 3:05. And I'm like, whoa, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time, and now I'm seeing it, you know, and I'm not feeling good about that either.
Marshall, one thing I was noticing that, as far as what I've seen as far as the orbit, it will be going between Jupiter and Mars. Now, Jupiter has a high magnetic field or gravitational pull that tends to pull away debris that comes through, you know, that could hit the Earth, and it ends up going to Jupiter. Now, you know, you're talking about the planet X going through, say, debris fields. I don't remember exact terminology, but it looks to me like what could happen is that it will block the ability by interfering with, you know, coming between Jupiter, Mars, and Earth and so on, block the ability of Jupiter to attract a lot of this out of space to itself and end up going to, you know, planets closer to the sun as far as debris goes in space.
Well, it's, yes, I mean, Jupiter is what, you know, we live because Jupiter is out there,
right,
intercepting. You know, the old expression, over my dead body. Well, that dead body for us is Jupiter,
yeah.
And there for the grace of God go we. Jupiter is really, it's out there, it's the big harvester. But this object is, you know, in terms of folklore, what we're seeing in the translations of the Sumerian texts and other folklore, it's approximately about 4 to 5 times the size of the Earth.
Oh, yeah.
So this is an object that has sufficient mass that, you know, Jupiter can do whatever it wants. It's just going to go. It's just going to keep going. It has mass and it has velocity. And when it's going that fast and it's that big, it's not going to do anything. Now, one thing Jupiter will help, of course, is that Jupiter will siphon off some of that debris that this
right.
is going to bring through. So, but how much of that we can count on, who knows? The other thing is that there's a tremendous number of unknowns with it right now. All we can really say at Yowza with any sense of definitive voice is that all of the harbinger signs that we predicted years ago are happening now. And they're happening with increasing severity. And so what we have pretty much worked out in what we would call a guesstimate. Keep in mind, the government understands a lot more. We literally have to subsist on breadcrumbs wherever we find them in terms
yeah.
of the data.
Mm-hmm.
But we're actually seeing 2013 as being the worst of it.
Huh.
And that's when we feel that that'll be the really rough ride is in 2013. 2011 through 2012, this is when things really get to be difficult. When what we're concerned about is where Earth is in relationship to this object,
right?
All right, when it crosses the ecliptic, the solar plane, all right, and because there is a possibility, there are great theories in terms of electric universe and such that really suggest that we could have a huge electrical event.
Absolutely. Look at the just to visualize the waves, you know, that it's going to cause in the atmosphere and coming through in its orbit. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. This event. There's, you know, as we get closer to it, what we've really been doing, what I've been doing mostly to try and, you know, crystal ball this thing as best we can as to what really will happen, is that we went through stages. We went through the validation stage. Is it really happening? Yes, it's really happening. Is it really going to be here? Yes, it's really going to be here. So let's try, you know, was it here before? In other words, is this a captive object in orbit around our sun, or is it a rogue? Is it going to come, you know, it's a one-trick pony. Well, it's not a one-trick pony. It's a captive orbit.
Right.
Captive object, been here before. And what we found, a lot of people have heard of Zechariah Sitchin, who translated the Sumerian scrolls. And Sumer was the first known civilization in the modern world. And they did some rather advanced things. Very, very, very astute, brilliant people. They were in Iraq, what is now modern-day Iraq. That's where this civilization came from. And that's where the term Nibiru comes from, is through the Sumer translations. The Nibiru of Sumer was also referred to by the Egyptians as the destroyer, and by the Druids as the frightener. And where we found a treasure trove of historical data on the past flybys was in a book we now publish called the Colburn Bible.
Right.
And the Colburn Bible was first, it actually from the beginning of the Bible to the end of it, and, you know, the authorship of it, was a little bit longer, actually, collectively, than the King James Bible, including the Old Testament.
You think so? Only 1,459 pages?
It, well, the Colburn actually is, you have, it's, there's two major bodies of work in the Colburn. It's a two-part thing.
Mm-hmm.
The first we call the Egyptian texts, and the second part we call the Celtic texts. The Egyptian texts were mostly written after the Exodus, and the Celtic texts were written after after the death of Jesus. And the history of it actually is rather interesting, because after Exodus, the Egyptians knew about Nibiru. They had their ancient accounts that had told them about this from previous. And during the time of Noah, there's actually stories in the Colburn that suggest that there were multiple arcs around the globe. So it just wasn't Noah. But and that was the worst of the events. That was the one where it causes the Earth to shift on its axis, like very much what Edgar Cayce says will happen. So Noah's flood was not 40 days of rain, 40 days, 40 nights. But what 40 days and 40 nights really refers to is that that is, if the planet is going to shift on its poles and the continents are going to move, much like, you know, peel the skin off of an orange, but then put it back on again, so the next thing you can have the meat rotating around inside the skin. Well, our planet could be the same way with the mantle over the magma.
Okay. Yeah. Well, hold on a second. Kathleen?
Yeah.
Thank you for your call, but we're going to see if someone else wants to get in.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, go ahead, Marshall.
I hope I answered your question, Kathleen.
I think you did.
Okay.
Because I asked her to go in case someone else wanted to call, because we're getting on the second half of our show now. The phone line is open. You can give us a call toll-free at 1-888-268-4313.
We do have another caller for you.
Okay.
We'll put her on.
Okay. You got the ladies tonight, Marshall.
Hey, Monique.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. Hello.
Hi, Monique. Princess here.
Oh, hi, Princess. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I have a question for Marshall here.
Okay.
My question is, how many instances have you heard of where people have supernaturally seen the incoming planet?
We have several. We have several that folks are reporting through. You know, there's a gentleman in Japan, Ahan Derave. We've featured him on our site. And Ahan is working with training people in the skill of remote viewing. That's something that was actually developed by American intelligence agencies here, and then it wound up being exported to other countries, namely Japan. And the remote viewers are seeing this object, but we also get reports from people who have dreams, visions, and what we find is that there's a consistent pattern with all of them, that it's a large dark object occluded by dust. And this would really be consistent with a small brown dwarf, a failed sun, that's still hot, and all of the ejecta from its failed detonation, you know, it may have kicked into a star, but it just didn't have enough mass to become a star, and so
it died.
And, you know, it leaves a huge dust field around it. That could be one way of explaining it. That's how Andy Lloyd in England, he's another Planet X researcher, 2012 Planet X researcher, and it's his dark star theory.
Yeah, sounds like one of the attempts that I had where I saw this cloud in the universe, and it was rather scary.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of folks that have, they see it, they report it, and we take it all seriously because it's human phenomena, and it's we're looking for the statistical relevance, what, you know, things that people are reporting, and these people don't know each other, all right?
Right.
And that's the key thing. They don't know each other.
Okay.
So
right.
What are we finding as common threats? And what they're reporting commonly is it's a large reddish object, A, B, it's coming up from the south, C, it's occluded by dust.
Yes.
And this is a consistent pattern that we're seeing through all kinds of paranormal experience.
I see.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, Princess. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. The phone lines are open. The number 888-268-4313 or 530-876-3222. We're speaking with Marshall Masters. He's a contributor of the Colbrin, and we are talking about Planet X and the Colbrin. You know, it's interesting that you said people are, you know, seeing it in different ways. And it kind of reminds me of that movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind,
mm-hmm.
where everybody was, you know, drawing the same picture. They didn't know what it meant, but they were drawn to a certain place. Do you think something like that drawing will come to us where people start to flock to certain spots on Earth?
That's a good question. I think that would be tied up with one of the issues, I think, of the indigo children, the
mm-hmm.
new children that are coming out in much greater numbers. And these children have an instinctive sense of self that's indomitable. They're not, we live in control societies.
Oh, yeah.
And so we are used to marching in lockstep with our leaders, whether we like them or not. The indigos don't walk in lockstep with anybody unless you chain them to a desk and pump them full of Ritalin.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids are, they're not materialistic by nature. They're very talented, have a high IQ, and to me they are the ones that will be not necessarily the leaders, but the pathfinders. They're the ones that are going to instinctively know where to go to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll trust their gut, and they'll go there. And
mm-hmm.
they're going to be people that see that, understand that, accept it, don't get intimidated by it, and they follow the kids. And then they're going to be those that are going to ho-hum, ho-hum, ho-hum. You know, those are the ones that laughed at Noah. You know, and the last thing they knew, they're sitting there and very intellectually pounding on the outside wall of an ark.
Yeah, like,
you know,
open the door, let me in.
Let me in.
Yeah.
No, it's too late then. And so they're those that are going to follow. I mean, this is, Monique, it's a time when the most important survival skill is not going to be building a bunker. It's going to be what you do. The very kind of things that you do are what is going to help people survive, because this is going to have to be folks that are going to be in touch with their inner selves, and it is going to be a pathway. The path to safety is the path of oneness, and to be a part of what is happening around you, and understanding that you are a part of what is happening around you, and that it is going to be an evolutionary event. And if we are clinging on to ourselves in a materialistic mode, you know, there goes my SUV, oh darn, you know, those people are going to be clamoring and trying to hold on to those things, whereas those who just say, hey, you know, I'm going to follow my gut tells me, and following spirit, and, you know, being compassionate, being kind, being tolerant, working together. There was a fellow that I interviewed on my show who is one of the top survival experts in the country. We did this interview on how do you survive something like what's coming up.
Okay, is that still on your site now?
Yeah.
Okay,
and,
well, direct people to it, then tell us about it.
Okay, and this fellow on my site, now I'd have to go, I'll just talk on and I'll find his...
Or just give your site and people can look at that interview plus other wonderful interviews you have up there.
Yeah, just go to yowza.com, YOWUSA.com/radio. And it'll be down, if you scroll down to the bottom of the page, there's one that is past Cut to the Chase shows. And that's where, you know, you want to, that's where you'll go down, you'll find I have a series of working with all the different researchers and all the different folks on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's down in that list. And so, but finding, one of the things that he said I thought was really, really helpful is that people who cannot live together die together.
Interesting.
Simple.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you go build a bunker and you fill your bunker with all kinds of guns and goodies and this and that and whatever, you know, dumb luck, your grandma's for Thanksgiving when the guacamole hits the fan, there you are, you get in the SUV, you race home on the last drop of diesel fuel, cacow, 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 you pull into the drive and the engine dies.
Mm-hmm.
You race around to the backyard, and there your bunker's been completely dug up. And then you look up at the top of your 9-foot fence, and there's your neighbors, and they are pointing your guns loaded with your ammo at your face.
Mm-hmm.
And they only got one question. Where's the other bunker?
Right.
And there's no other bunker. So this is, you know, doing this stuff is more about the spiritual sense of where do you go. I mean, the most things materially you do is you learn how to be resourceful, you know, a 30-pound pack that you can put on your back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about what you do. I call it a scoop pack. And it has the basic things, you know, like, you know, you can go to Costco for $20. You get these wind-up flashlights that you don't need batteries for. Get number 4 coffee filters. They're great for filtering sediment out of water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can, then all you have to have is a few drops of mercurochrome of iodine. Put it in there to make it potable. And, of course, if you scratch yourself up, it burns like the dickens, but it will sterilize the wound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you find how to be resourceful with dual-use things, little things. You know, simple things, like a whistle.
And what's a whistle going to do for us?
If you're buried under a building, a whistle is going to help find you.
Yes, it will. I think they needed that out here in the last mudslides where people had air pockets.
That's
right. Marshall, we've got about, maybe 6 minutes left. I want to ask this question, and I don't know if it ties in together, but I'm quite sure you'll let me know. They've got the Heart Project out there. And with the HAARP project that's in existence now, does that in any way affect what's happening with Planet X?
HAARP is not going to affect Planet X. Planet X is the quintessential 800-pound bear. It will sit where it wants to. What it is going to do is that, and as a matter of fact, they have just increased the operational capacity of it tenfold, where not only can they use it as a mind control mechanism,
mm-hmm.
but also they can use it for literally doing a CAT scan of the Earth. And with that device, they would be able to find, for example, in Iran, exactly where the underground manufacturing facilities are
mm-hmm.
and map those out so bunker busters can take them out. So HAARP is it's coming into its own. It's becoming much, much more powerful. It's 10 times, they've massively upgraded it, 10 times its original research prototype proof concept, broadcast capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And they can use it for a number of things. They can, of course, use it to help us in a sense that instead of drugging us, that they could use this as a way to pacify the public. So that, we don't wind up tearing everything apart in a hysterical panic.
But isn't that a bit scary, though? I mean, even say we don't get to the point, at least in the next 2 or 3 years, of hysterical panic, and they're utilizing that energy in a non-ethical way. And the reason why I bring that up is because when you look at our government right now, there's so many things that they're doing unethically. How do we know that they are not utilizing this information to control us, to kind of, bring us into the fold so we'll pay $6 a gallon for gas and be happy about it?
Not sure that they can do that. It's kind of like psychology with a hammer. this is not going to be terribly subtle. When they turn this thing on to do it, it'll be an extreme measure in extreme circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, $6 a gallon is going to be, it's going to be a lot harder for us here, but I mean, it's not going to be something unusual for people in Europe.
Right.
And, we will have to adapt. And for us, it's just a matter of, not being wasteful, being smart. The big losers with the price of oil going up to $6 a gallon are going to be the big box stores, the Walmarts, the Costcos, anything that's not within walking distance of the neighborhoods.
That's very true, because you're going to think about, conserving fuel. At least I know I do now. My errands are definitely planned.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about getting out there and just, going for the joyride that you could do even 3 months ago, just to kind of shift your energy a little bit. Do you feel that our food supply will be compromised tremendously? I know you mentioned earlier that there'd be a compromise. Do we need to start planting veggies in our backyard or in raising our own chickens and whatever?
I think that it's time for people to really delve into being self-resourceful about
mm-hmm.
food. And I think that right now the key thing is learning how to find things that are you can eat. Growing them, we may not be able to stay in one place long enough to do it, or you could grow something and you wind up having to defend it.
Mm-hmm.
We could go through a tough time, so it's more about learning how to live off the land. That one book, it's by Cody Lundin, is his name, Lundin.
Mm-hmm.
It's 98.6 degrees, Keeping Your Ass Alive. The title tells it. His book is incredibly popular. And that would be something that, at this stage, what I would really tell your listeners is, if you start building the bunkers and filling the bunkers and all that right now, you're almost doing yourself a disservice, because if you're going to survive this thing, you have to understand that it is going to be what's between your ears,
mm-hmm.
all right, that's going to have the greatest impact. When things really get crazy, people are going to respond stupidly. and do stupid things. They're going to be the lemons. Case in point, hate to say it, but when we look back at the Sumatra superquake, the people that were walking out as the water was receding from the beaches to pick up stranded fish.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And yet, people that we call ignorant natives, mm-hmm. they knew, hey, head for the hills, go to high ground, you know, legs don't fail me now.
Right.
And they were getting up there. And so ignorant natives, so to speak, and ignorant wild animals, so to speak, they didn't die. It was all of us civilized folks that, you know, took the material path, and that's what killed us.
Mm-hmm.
So we really need to, you know, become aware of what's going on so when these things happen, we can take action that we don't wind up in a run-to-the-roar situation. And I think this is really important for people. It's the way lions hunt in Africa. And you'll have an old lioness, and she can't run fast enough to bring down a gazelle, but she's got a fierce roar. And so what happens is the young lionesses move downwind of a herd of gazelle or whatever they're hunting,
mm-hmm.
and they crawl in on their bellies very stealthily in the high grass and get into position. And then the old lions go upwind, all right, and then they start roaring for all they are worth. Well, what happens is the gazelles, what do they hear? They hear the old lions. What do they smell? They smell the old lions. And what they do then is they go in the exact opposite directions, right into the gaping jaws of the young lionesses who are young enough and strong enough to bring them down.
Mm-hmm.
They have the speed and the agility. Ergo, if the gazelle understood, if you run to the roar, you have a greater chance of surviving. And that's what's going to happen in this survival situation. You're going to have people who understand where and when to run to the roar, and most of the rest will not. And knowing when to run to the roar really means about preparing yourself, becoming informed, getting in tune with yourself, really working on your spiritual awareness, because this is really going to be critical to you. If you are spiritual,
mm-hmm.
being spiritual gets you to being aware of what's happening around you,
right.
and how it works with you. You don't, you know, when we become material, we separate ourselves from the rest of the world. And when we become spiritual, we come closer. We blend with it. There's no sharp divisions between us and everything that is around us. And that's the reason why the more spiritual people and the ones who have thought it through and have taken the time to understand and to learn and to see what is happening for what it is without judging it, just accept it for what it is, these are the people that are going to run to the roar and they're going to survive the flyby event. The rest, and that is the vast majority of people, that's a huge majority of people, they're not going to run to the roar.
Okay, so this is all about being aware, first of all, being aware of your body, being aware of your spirit, actually being aware of your mind so that you can pay attention and then take action once you've received some information.
That's right. That's right. And it's the very things that you talk about and work with people and about how to, you know, and what Cody says. Now, Cody, again, is people who can't live together die together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when we can't live together, it's because we're going me, 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 me.
Yeah. Yep, and it's all about, you know, all of us, not just me. Well, Marshall, our time is up. I have truly enjoyed you, as usual, and having you on the show today. I appreciate it very much. You have to come back and do it again.
I look forward to it. I love this energy.
Okay. Well, I love being in the glow of your energy also. And, folks, visit his website, and that's www.youwusa.com.
Yes, ma'am.
And you can get a copy of the Colburn Bible there, the Godchild Covenant, Indigo ET, and some other books that he's fond of. And I will be back next week with author Melissa Zolo. If you'd like to get any information about any of my guests or you want to find out more about me or my personal appearances, log on to either one of my websites, www.healing-visions.com,
or www.walkingwithspirit.net. Many blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.